What is up, you guys? Welcome to another episode of Controversial Thoughts. You know, just all kinds of cool stuff to talk about. So I get a lot of questions about blood work and labs on carnivore, animal-based diets. I'm going to do a whole podcast about my blood work. I've done GI testing and blood testing a bunch and some genetic testing and all kinds of stuff. And I'm going to go over a whole podcast on that. But I want to do a quicker, shorter Controversial Thoughts video where I bring in my buddy Kurt. And we are going to talk about his blood work on a carnivore diet, and we're going to break this all down. If you guys have questions about this, there's an old podcast. All of my podcasts are at the Heart and Soil website, heartandsoil.co.co. There's an old podcast in which I break the blood work down. If you guys have questions about blood work, you can always email me, Dr. Paul, drpaul@heartandsoil.co. But this podcast with Kurt's blood work and the podcast that I've done in the past and the future podcast that I will do with my blood work will answer many of your questions, because people always ask me, what blood work should I get? You basically want to get what's in this podcast plus the extras that we will talk about. So, all right, let's just jump in. Kurt, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well.
All right. So we're both in Austin, but we're doing this virtually via Zoom because it allows us to share the screen share for everybody. But before we jump into your blood work, tell people how you're eating and what your diet is like, and that'll give us some context for all the things we're going to look at.
Yeah, so pretty much a nose-to-tail carnivore diet. Well, I think it's well constructed. I've been working on it for the last year and a half, 2 years, and I've been eating for the most part kidney 3-4 days a week, I'd say 3 or 4 ounces, and then I also do liver. I do a lot of red meat. I do mainly grass-fed beef. I do eggs most days of the week. And I've just been doing a lot of like the fundamental carnivore stuff that, it's been a good journey for the last 2 years doing carnivore like that. So I do a little bit of honey midweek, and, it's been kind of an evolution over the last, several months kind of introducing that, but it's been carnivore, I would say nose to tail. And you can kind of be the judge, Paul, of how close to where you want it to be it is and what you think of when you think of a true nose to tail. But yeah, 2 years carnivore now.
Cool. Any supplements?
Yeah, actually I got some of the Heart and Soul stuff recently and really was digging it. I think, so I've been traveling a lot. So like, especially the last month and a half, I've got the Firestarter, the Organ Complex, the gut one is really cool too, because it's hard to find tripe. Some of those more unique sort of foods that are even hard to source from like farmers markets and from some of the more special places where I get my food that is more unique. So I've been really enjoying those, and I do those pretty regularly. It if I have organs at my disposal, it's a little bit of a trade off where I'll pick certain ones, but yeah, I've been digging those. But other than a little bit of that, some of those, I also do boron. Probably every day I do about 6 milligrams of that, and then real salt, and that's about it.
Cool. All right. Awesome. All right. With that context, you guys, you've heard that Kurt has been doing nose to tail carnivore diet for about 2 years now. He gets fresh organs when he can get them, which is most of the time. When he can't, he's filling in with desiccated organs. We happen to make some at Heart and Soil if you need them. You guys can always email me if you have questions, and we'll look at his blood work and kind of go from there. I think this will be really cool, and we will answer a lot of questions for you guys. So let's just jump into this right now. So here is the beginning of Kurt's blood work. Most of the blood work that I order on people is from Cleveland Heart Lab. I like this lab. And we'll start at the top here. So we've got the inflammatory markers. A lot of people always ask me questions, isn't carnivore inflammatory? Isn't eating a whole bunch of meat inflammatory? The answer is resoundingly no, it's not. And you can see that very clearly in Kurt's blood work. And I'll give you guys a preview that mine looks essentially the same here in terms of the inflammation as well. Myeloperoxidase is an enzyme secreted by neutrophils. It's very low. HSCRP is high sensitivity C-reactive protein. It's very low. You can see Kurt's old blood work here from October of 2019, when we did this a little over 10 months ago. It was also less than 0.3. And F to isoprostane to creatinine ratio is just another index of, I would say, oxidative stress. Something was happening here. Who knows if this was just a random bump in F2 isoprostane, but the more recent one is quite low. So no oxidative stress, no bump in hsCRP, no neutrophils activated. Animal-based diets are not inflammatory. They are nutrient-rich in what humans have been eating for our entire evolution, you guys. So that's a great place to start. Then we'll jump into cholesterol here.
Paul, I'll mention one thing on the F2 isoprostane. We actually pulled labs from a different source since this October number. So I've actually retested the the hsCRP, and it was lower the last time too. I think like 6-7 months ago. I think we did directly from Quest. I can't remember exactly who it was, but in that one, I think the reason it was off was I had some sleep issues and I was dealing with working out a little bit more. So that's just to add a little context to that.
And little things like that can cause bumps. It's important if you're going to get an hsCRP that you don't have a hard workout the day before. When you guys listen to the podcast that I do on my blood work, you'll see that I had an hsCRP that went up to 1.7 after I did a day of ARX, which is the worst workout I've ever done. It's the hardest workout I've ever done. It's adaptive resistance training. Shout out to the ARX guys here in Austin. It'll crush you. My muscles were ridiculously sore and my hsCRP bumped to 1.7. So if you're having a hard workout and your CRP is up, that could be going on. You got to take a couple of different metrics or at least measures to make sure there's nothing going on in the background here. Looking at the lipids, this is common. I have done so many podcasts on lipids. There's a podcast coming out in the future with Nadir Ali. There's a previous one with Nadir Ali. There's two with Dave Feldman. There's one with Ivor Cummins. There's one with Jack Wolfson. And there's one with Malcolm Kendrick. They are all at heartandsoil.co on Fundamental Health, which is my podcast. But this is the pattern that I usually see. You will see an elevated, quote, LDL cholesterol with a high HDL and a low triglycerides. This is metabolic health. If you are worried by a high LDL, I recommend that you listen to one of those six podcasts. There is an enormous amount of stuff, of content that I have done arguing that LDL is not causal in atherosclerosis, and an elevated LDL in the absence of metabolic dysfunction, and we will see later in Kurt's labs how I can tell that he's metabolically healthy, is not an issue. I will repeat that. An elevated LDL, quote, in the absence of metabolic dysfunction is not problematic. Context matters. We're going to see contextual things come up in a moment with uric acid as well, but context is everything, you guys. And Western medicine always forgets this. The context for both uric acid, for gout, and for lipids, lipoproteins, for cholesterol, for LDL is everything. Western medicine ignores this. The context is everything. It is metabolic health. If you are metabolically healthy, you are fine. This is not the same thing as an elevated LDL in the setting of metabolic unhealth, which we would call metabolic dyslipidemia, which would have high triglycerides, low HDL, generally speaking. So Kurt's LDL is, quote, high. Mine is actually higher. If you guys saw what I posted, the last LDL I had was 536, and my CAC scan, my coronary artery calcium scan, was zero. So go back and look at that content if you're curious, and I will talk about that on my blood work podcast in the future. You can see here the triglyceride to HDL ratio is very low. The LDL particle number is just a reflection of the LDL cholesterol. This is milligrams per deciliter. This is a density measure. This is an actual particle count. You can see Kurt's count is still, quote, high, but again, context is everything. Small LDL is low. LDL size is good, 22.9 nanometers or 229 angstroms. My LDL is 24.7 nanometers, so it's even bigger than this particle. And that probably is just reflective of the amount of carrier molecules in the LDL in my blood work. Kurt's HDL particle number is quite high, 45.1 micromole per liter. You will also notice that the reference ranges of these are one order of magnitude different. There is over 10 times more. There's over 10 times more HDL here than there is LDL, or there's significantly more HDL than LDL, maybe not 10 times looking at these units, but you get the idea. HDL is more prevalent in your bloodstream than LDL, but HDL doesn't cause atherosclerosis. HDL is also a smaller particle than LDL, but doesn't cause atherosclerosis. Anyway, listen to the podcast I've done with Malcolm Kendrick, Dave Feldman et al. If you are still worried that LDL causes atherosclerosis.
Well, when they pull these labs and people look at these variables, in the context of being metabolically healthy, as you get through this video, are there any of the lipid numbers in that sense, like, going to scare you? Or have you seen like a lot of ranges, or is this pretty typical of a carnivore? Just curious, because there's just so many things that they're looking at there.
It's pretty typical of somebody that eats well and is metabolically healthy. I think that if you are not chugging vegetable oil, your LDL is likely to be high. And if you are eating saturated fat from animals, which I consider to be very healthy, your LDL is likely to be high. And this is what we see. And you're going to be metabolically healthy as well. You'll see HDL size 10.9 nanometers. LDL is 22.9 nanometers. HDL is smaller than LDL. If this were a matter of LDL size leading to LDL infiltration into the subendothelial space, it would be silly because LDL is twice as big as HDL. It's not how big the LDL particle is. LDL size is just a proxy for insulin sensitivity, quote unquote. It's a proxy for metabolic health. So it's not that your LDL is so small that it can sneak into your arteries. That's silly. HDL is way smaller. Okay, so glucose, fasting glucose 86, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see it above 100. C-peptide is a fragment of insulin. And here is your total insulin molecule. Both of those are low, suggesting metabolic health. Now, you have to be careful. I think that insulin, fasting insulin, and C-peptide are much more relevant when they are eaten, when they are taken in the setting of eating carbohydrates. A fasting insulin that's very low when you're not eating carbs is not so much of an indication, but it's still valuable. Hemoglobin A1C 5.2, pretty good. Average blood glucose 103. That's right about where I want to see it. I want to talk about this TMAO. You can see Kurt's TMAO here in October was 10, now it's 42. Stephen Gundry would fall out of his chair, but as most of you guys know, if you've read my book, The Carnivore Code, TMAO is a total red herring. It's never been shown to be causally problematic for humans. And I want to share a couple of articles that I pulled up really quickly on screen share that will corroborate this assertion. If you are listening to someone and they are telling you that TMAO is bad, they do not know the literature. So the first one is this article, The Assessment of the Causal Direction Between Gut Microbiota-Dependent Metabolites and Cardiometabolic Health, a Bidirectional Mendelian Randomization Study. It's a whole mouthful. This is what you need to know. Our Mendelian randomization findings support that type 2 diabetes and kidney disease increase TMAO levels, and observational evidence for cardiovascular diseases may be due to confounding or reverse causality. So this is a great article. You should read it. This was actually a pretty landmark article suggesting that, hey, TMAO as causal in cardiovascular disease is baloney. It's baloney. It's gefilte fish, right? It's not true. It's observational evidence that's confounded. Reverse causality means that because kidney disease and type 2 diabetes are comorbid with cardiovascular disease and those can raise TMAO, often you see those correlated, but there is not one shred of evidence that TMAO is causal of cardiovascular disease, nor is there one shred of evidence that LDL is causal for atherosclerosis. One more here, this is great. TMAO in seafood, rotten or forgotten. Basically, the authors of this short little paper say, indeed, TMAO has previously been suggested as a marker of seafood consumption. TMAO is much higher in seafood. Seafood is an important dietary source of free TMAO, in addition to TMAO precursors, carnitine and choline. So fish has never been associated with cardiovascular disease. Red meat, carnitine and choline containing foods have, but that is what I call in the book, that is confounded by healthy and unhealthy user bias. If you are confused about epidemiology, listen to the previous content on all of that. Basically, TMA is the compound that is formed, that is made into TMAO in the liver. You get pre-TMA from bacteria in the gut when you eat carnitine and choline, but TMAO is not toxic. And these authors are saying, as they say in this last sentence, taken together, TMAO, contrary to TMA, does not smell bad, and its ingestion via seafood should probably not be regarded as fishy business. Basically, what they're saying is TMAO isn't bad for humans, and anyone that says that doesn't know the literature. Not surprised. Now, if you had any questions about TMAO, you can also find this interesting data in rats showing that low-dose TMAO reduced blood pressure, reduced diastolic blood pressure, and it reduced heart fibrosis in hypertensive rats. So TMAO did something good in rats. Again, it's an animal model, but there's TMAO doing something positive. And then if you want one more, it's a review on TMAO, the good, the bad, the unknown. Despite the accumulating evidence, it is questioned whether TMAO is the mediator of or bystander in the disease process of cardiovascular disease. TMAO is a bystander. It's probably beneficial for humans, and there's no evidence that it's causal. So this TMAO bump for Kurt doesn't worry me. It says more about his gut flora and the fact that he's eating carnitine and choline. I'll tell you what, I've also seen TMAO high in people who don't eat meat. That's been documented before in vegetarians. It's not causal. It's not something to worry about. Stephen Gundry is wrong. All right, moving on.
Paul, why do you think people are so misled by this though? Is it similar like the whole wave with the lipid hypothesis and just not really, it's the associative things that they're seeing in these variables?
Correlation is not causation, but it's always reported in the media as causation when it's actually correlation. So it's just people don't understand the studies they're looking at, physicians who are biased and trying to create the TMAO story to make red meat look bad or ignoring the fact that there's more TMAO in fish than is formed by the carnitine and choline in red meat. And also that some vegetables have TMAO and also that none of it is actual interventional evidence. It's all correlation. So we're badly misled, you guys. This happens over and over and over. All right. This next part's really important. Methylmalonic acid is just a marker of B12, but I want to point out Kurt's homocysteine is 6.2. Now, I forget, Kurt, if you have polymorphisms for NTHFR, but in carnivores or people who are doing animal-based diets who do not eat organ meats, I see homocysteine bump. This is one of the major problems I have with the ideology or the notion that we can get away with just eating meat. Homocysteine will bump, and that is not good. It's associated with oxidative stress, many other problems. You don't want your homocysteine to be above 7 or 8, and you will become folate and riboflavin deficient without organs, which is why liver, desiccated organs, or eating nose-to-tail is crucial. Our ancestors have always done it. I have an MTHFR polymorphism. My homocysteine will be high if I don't eat organs. That happened before I was a carnivore, but I don't need to take methylfolate because I eat the organs. You should not take methylfolate. You should eat nose-to-tail. You can see Kurt's previous homocysteine, 5.9. In carnivores that I work with who come to me, who are just eating meat, I see homocysteine 10, 11, 12, 14. Not where you want your homocysteine to be. This is undeniable. You cannot get enough folate from meat. You cannot get enough riboflavin from meat. Big problem here. Don't ignore homocysteine, guys.
And I don't have a polymorphism for that.
You do?
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coenzyme Q10, 2.55, way above the reference range. Lots of coenzyme Q10 in heart, in liver, in all kinds of the organs. Most cardiologists would be so stoked to see a coenzyme Q10 of 2.55. They're going to use supplements, but we are getting it from organs. Here's Kurt's folate, 7.5, B12, 889, vitamin D, 56. Again, you want to be in the sun to get this vitamin D. You don't want to be taking a vitamin D supplement. Let's check out the fatty acids. This will be cool with regard to linoleic acid. So you can see what I really look at here is how much EPA, DPA, which is docosapentaenoic acid, and DHA, there's plenty. And then these are really interesting. This linoleic acid has gone from 20.9 to 17.9. That's what I want to see. I want to see linoleic acid going down. This is a serum. Okay, this is fatty acids in the whole blood, right? So it's not a red blood cell. You have to look at different reference ranges, but I'm still happy to see linoleic acid declining in Kurt's blood relative to this one. Did you make any dietary changes, less linoleic acid containing foods, Kurt, that might account for this?
No, I haven't. I don't think, what would affect that, Paul?
Less pork, less fat from chicken.
Yes. Yes. I've done a lot less of that lately. I'd say like in the last 6 months, I've gotten rid of a lot of conventional pork, even the pork I was getting from like the farmer's markets, because I've been watching your stories and your comments about PUFAs. And so I've been just kind of steering more towards grass-fed beef and like my wild game that I'm hunting.
Okay. So that's probably what we're seeing here. I've spoken about this before. You can see the amount of linoleic acid in somebody's blood and red blood cells based on these numbers and based on the diet. So when Kurt cut out pork, this dropped, which I think is a good thing. That's what you want to see. This arachidonic acid, I think, is totally normal. I don't go by this reference range. This is a healthy fat. It's necessary for muscle growth. We got the full comprehensive metabolic blood panel here. You can see it's all pretty normal. Glucose, calcium, sodium, potassium, chloride, bicarbonate. Kurt is not acidotic. BUN is in normal. Kidney function is normal. Alkaline phosphatase is high level gallbladder function, normal. ALT and AST is normal. That's liver function. Again, Kurt's kidneys, liver, gallbladder, stomach, all function totally normally on an animal-based nose-to-tail carnivore diet. Not surprising, because that's all healthy food for humans. That's what we're supposed to be eating. Bilirubin is normal. Serum magnesium is normal. CK is muscle breakdown, normal. I want to point out this uric acid. It's actually 2.8. If you listen to conventional wisdom, they will tell you that eating a lot of organ meats and meat is going to raise your uric acid. It's going to cause Kurt to get gout. Well, his uric acid is below the reference range. So that's a totally worthless paradigm. It's clearly missing something. I said this earlier, context matters. In the context of metabolic health, meats, organ meats, and fructose do not cause gout. They do not. It's metabolic health. Fructose does not cause gout if you are metabolically healthy. I'll do a whole video about that. People need to stop fear-mongering around that. And also, hey, organ meats do not. If you have diabetes, the context is completely different. You better fix your diabetes. If you want to know how to fix your diabetes, you should listen to all the other content I've done about polyunsaturated fats, which I believe are really at the root of this.
Quick question for you.
Great. What's that?
Quick question. On the GFR, we saw the GFR kind of drop, and I posted these labs just going through myself, and it's still well above the reference range. Do you think maybe eating more protein would affect that, or it could just be a variable that from time to time fluctuates depending on the day and the way the body's reacting? Or do you have any thoughts on that? Because I think it was 110 before and went down to 80.
Yeah, it's going to fluctuate based on what you had the night before. So GFR is a calculated measure. It's the glomerular filtration rate. So here it is, EGFR. That E means it's calculated. It's not directly measured. And they're going to calculate it based on the creatinine. Now, in people who have more muscle mass, this is going to bump. And if you're eating more protein, this can bump, which is why if you're worried about your kidney function and you're eating a lot of protein or you have a lot of muscle mass, you should also get a cystatin C. And I've talked about that in the past. We didn't get it for Kurt. I'm not worried about his kidney function at all. But creatinine can also bump up with more meat in the diet and more muscle mass.
Mm.
So good question. So you look at Kurt's hormones here, his DHEA, estradiol, FSH, and LH stimulate the testosterone production in the testicles. You can see Kurt's testosterone is very robust. His free testosterone is very robust. This is a normal human male's testosterone, you guys. This is what you want. Carnivore diets do not cause the testosterone to drop. I definitely think carbohydrates help with this. You'll also notice his IGF-1. Many people, I've debated Stephen Gundry and many others about this, will say IGF-1 is going to bump. You're going to overactivate mTOR. Baloney, gefilte fish. Total bunk, you guys. Look at this IGF-1. It's less than the average. The Z-score is almost an entire standard deviation less than the average. He's not overactivating mTOR. He's not overactivating IGF-1, probably because he's doing some degree of intermittent fasting. What is your timing of your food look like, Kurt?
Breakfast around 10, usually most days, and then dinner is usually around 5 or 6. But then I'm really strict about not eating outside of my normal feeding window. But yeah, it's not too tight, but once I get done with dinner, I don't eat after that.
So the benefits of intermittent fasting, even when you're eating meat, you don't have to overstimulate mTOR. PTH, that's calcium. You want that to be in the lower third to fourth of the reference range. You want to see LH and FSH robust. If you have a low testosterone, you can email me or answer your questions, drpaul@hardandsoil.co. But if FSH and LH are low, you have a sleep problem or another issue. Your pituitary is not stimulating the testicles. Obviously, these are male hormones. Women have testosterone too. Looks a little different. You can see bioavailable testosterone. All the testosterone labs look amazing. SHBG is interesting, sex hormone binding globulin. I want to point out that Kurt's went from 103 to 57. And my question for you, Kurt, is were you supplementing with boron in October? And because I saw mine do a similar thing when I added carbohydrates back in. The addition of carbohydrates in my diet dropped my SHBG, which made the free testosterone go way up. Were you supplementing with boron in October?
Yeah, I was. Okay. Yeah, I think I'm kind of in line with you. I was not doing carbohydrates in these labs in October.
Right. So the difference is this is carbohydrate less. This is carnivore without carbs. Both of them are fine, you guys. This is carnivore with carbohydrates. SHBG drops a lot. And you can see testosterone went from 703 to 977. The free went way up because the sex hormone binding globulin dropped. So I don't think we know androgen sensitivity could have changed here, but I thought it was interesting that on both Kurt and my labs, SHBG dropped with carbohydrates. There are many notable carnivores who have very low testosterone, and I think this is problematic. I think the addition of some ancestrally consistent carbohydrates is very valuable for humans. You can look at Kurt's thyroid, looks pretty normal. TSH, T4, T3. If you guys have questions about thyroid, listen to the two podcasts I've done with L. Russ. on people on generally low carb diets, I do see a low total T3. I would expect Kurt's to be a little bit higher, but you can see his TSH isn't bumping. So I'm not worried about his thyroid labs. Generally speaking, I think this is fine. We do see low total T3 on people on ketogenic diets, though. It sounds like Kurt is ketogenic most of the time if you're only eating honey a few times a week. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm doing keto. I'm eating a lot of like suet beef fat in the mornings. And then I'm doing the intermittent fasting. And then I'm only adding carbs probably four to five days a week. Other than that, it's probably 5-10 grams of carbs a day at the most from just random things. But for the most part, I'm very ketogenic.
Okay. So there's some variance here. I wonder if he added more carbs, if the T3 would bump here, but the free T3 is totally within normal. And if you're not having any symptoms of cold or would be the hypothyroid symptom I would think of, or weight gain or lethargy, these thyroid labs are totally physiologic, I think, for people who are on lower carb animal-based diets. Anti-thyroid antibodies are here. They're both very low. You can see Kurt's ferritin is interesting. Kurt does have a polymorphism that causes him to overabsorb iron. Between these two, we did phlebotomy for Kurt. So I don't like ferritin to go over 300. And if it does, you do phlebotomy. It's not that I don't want Kurt to be eating meat and organs. It's that he avidly absorbs iron. So let's do phlebotomy a few times every year and get rid of that excess ferritin. You'll also notice that as the ferritin goes from 417 to 257, the F2 isoprostane came down. Could have also been his workout. So something might have been better there. But a 417 ferritin, I would do phlebotomy. Again, these are the hemochromatosis genes. I've talked about that in the past. Transferrin sat is 22. He doesn't have classical hemochromatosis. He just has one of the other variants. The transferrin sat will be very high if he had classical hemochromatosis. White blood cells. A lot of people have white blood cells that are right around this 3.5 range, technically out of the reference range, but it's not a problem. Kurt isn't having recurrent infections. In fact, he crushed coronavirus earlier this year. You didn't have any problem with that, did you?
No, it was pretty mild.
So Kurt's immune system clearly functions just fine. You see red blood cells, hemoglobin, hematocrit, MCV, MCH, all of these things, totally normal. I like to look at the RDW, the red cell distribution width, platelets, neutrophil percentage. If you're interested in immunometabolism, listen to the podcast I did with Tommy Wood. We talked about the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio. So you can compare the absolute neutrophils to the absolute lymphocytes. And what happens here, you guys? This is where you will also see metabolic dysfunction when the neutrophil to lymphocyte ratio changes. You don't want expansion of the lymphocyte pool at the expense of the neutrophils. That is a problem. You don't want them to be imbalanced. That is what we see in people with severe COVID. And the immune system is connected with metabolic health. Everything is connected with metabolic health. You can see it here. Obviously, Kurtz is fine. We know he is metabolically healthy because he has a low fasting insulin, a low fasting glucose, a low C-peptide. And if we were wearing a CGM, which I know he's worn from NutriSense, you don't see a lot of deviation in the blood glucose throughout the day.
Yeah, just to comment on that, Paul, I think my fasted blood sugar when I was waking up was in the high 70s, low 80s, almost all the time on the CGM. And then if you go back to that panel, I had another comment. It'll come back to me. But that's the main comment I wanted to make, that was looking good.
Yeah. And I think it's very valuable to wear a CGM and to get a sense of what your postprandial blood sugars look like.
You would also say the fasted triglycerides are another variable, right, that you would look for metabolic dysfunction. Those are elevated.
Yeah. Yes, I would. And yours are very low. Kurt's urine looks just fine. The pH is low because he's a carnivore, but I don't think it's a problem. Specific gravity is kind of high. He's probably a little bit dehydrated, but it's fine. There's nothing else negative in the urine. And the only other things you see here are that there's no arsenic or lead in the urine. There was no heavy metals in the urine. And that was the end of the blood work panel for Kurt. So it looks pretty darn good. Now, the only thing I want to mention to you guys is that a lot of people ask about oxidized LDL, and I don't like the oxidized LDL from Cleveland Heart Labs. I like it from this lab, which we can order for you, Kurt, Boston Heart, oxidized phospholipids on ApoB. I'm going to get this on myself, and I'm going to get this on Kurt, but this is the test you want if you want to get oxidized LDL. You do not want ox LDL from Cleveland Heart Labs. Cleveland Heart Labs they're most 99.99% of oxidized LDL is not accurate. It's a Boolean. It's a positive or negative. It's an antibody to one oxidized phospholipid on the surface of an LDL particle will turn it positive. That test from Boston Heart will tell you what the percentage of phospholipids on the surface of your ApoB containing particles, which is LDL and chylomicrons, are going to have what the percentage of the phospholipids on there are that are oxidized. So that is the test you want for oxidized LDL, not the regular ox LDL. So that is Kurt's blood work, you guys. He's been on a carnivore diet for 2 years, nose to tail, using desiccated organs when he's traveling to fill in stuff. If you guys need desiccated organs, check us out at Heart and Soil, heartandsoil.co, heartandsoil.co. You can always email me, drpaul@heartandsoil.co. On Sundays or when the newsletter comes out, I released that today. I'm going to do a whole podcast with my blood work in going to more depth, but this will be a companion podcast to that. Kurt has an Instagram. Where can people find you, Kurt?
I'm at Carnivore Kurt on Instagram. And then we have a YouTube channel that I run that's Carnivore Kurt as well on YouTube. This
will probably be up at Kurt's channel as well as mine. Yeah. And hopefully Kurt and I are going to get out hunting soon whenever he gets a bow and stop shooting rifles. All right, Kurt, any more questions before we wrap this one up?
No, I mean, I think you answered a lot of them. I think for everyone that, I think the honey has been a really big, interesting variable to introduce, like the carbs themselves. That's really changed. It seems like the hormones, my strength in my performances with the gym, I've noticed that having some carbs has allowed me to feel a little bit more like I can recover quicker and also get better performance with some of these workouts. So it's a little off topic, but I think that that's been like one of the major changes. And then the phlebotomy has helped a lot also with, at least with iron levels. So I think those are the biggest two variables that I've adjusted since these last panels. And it seems like those are actually making some nice tweaks to our overall results from what we can tell.
Blood work is valuable. Don't ignore it. Work with a physician that knows what the context needs to be, that understands animal-based diets, that understands this type of blood work. We are going to be putting up an animal-based referral network resource for you guys at heartandsoil.co. We'll let you know when that happens. We've got all the people, we've got like over 500 people already that are on it, that are providers throughout the country. If you have questions, you want to know somebody who's near you, who will know how to interpret labs, you can send us an email at Dr. Paul, send me an email, drpaul@heartandsoil.co, and we'll get back to you. But we're going to put that up on the website as well in the future. I don't take clients anymore. My practice is full. So we're going to provide more resources for all of you guys to do this kind of stuff. The last thing I'll share before we wrap up is a cool article I found this morning. Somebody sent it to me on Instagram. Not totally on the topic, but that was really cool. The impact of carnivory on human development and evolution revealed by a new unifying model of weaning in mammals. Takeaway from this one is that carnivory predicted the time point of early weaning in humans with remarkable precision, showing that carnivory appears to provide both a necessary and sufficient explanation as to why humans wean so much earlier than the great apes. And what's cool about this is that this is yet another piece of evidence to suggest that the introduction of meat and organs into the human diet was critical for the evolution of humans. Since early weaning yields shorter interbirth intervals and higher rates of reproduction, with profound effects on population dynamics, our findings highlight the emergence of carnivory as a process fundamentally determining human evolution. There you have it, you guys. How cool is that? It wasn't plants that made us into these badass humans. It was eating meat and organs. Do not deny that. Do not deny that. Know that meat and organs are good for you. We showed that with Kurt's blood work. We'll show that with my blood work. Get your organs in. Get it at Heart and Soil. Get it fresh. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. Stay radical. You're part of the remembering. You know it.